This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you, everyone, for being with us today. It's a beautiful Sunday here in summer, although it is a beautiful Sunday with a lot of humidity here in the studio. What's up with that rusty Sempre? It's almost like you got the hot bluegrass. Good answer. Our guest today here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, Jeff Gallagher. He's the CEO of Virginia Bio. We're going to be talking about biotechnology, especially here in the state of Virginia. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks so much. It's a drive from Richmond, correct?
That's right. That's a pretty drive. I like that drive.
It's a drive from Richmond to Williamsburg and Hampton that's kind of annoying.
That can get a little gnarly, yeah. I was driving once back from a meeting here in Charlottesville with some companies back to Richmond, and it was 60 miles, and I was reflecting on how it took me a lot less time than folks in one small section of northern Virginia going to another. So puts it in perspective.
Yes, it does. Thank you so much for being here. I'm interested in today's topic, everybody. We will be talking about biotechnology. And, you know, when I always tell some friends what I'm going to be talking about, people ask me, hey, what's the show this week? And you talk about, it's all about biotechnology, and you get the sort of quizzical look across the face because a variety of things come to mind. So define biotechnology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of the joys of being on a program like this, Rick, is it makes you step back a step and look at the things that you take for granted every day in your workaday life. Biotechnology, in the biggest sense, is the science and technology applied to living systems. And another step further, thinking of the living systems as technology in and of themselves. So we all know that, say, therapeutic drugs, you know, we think of chemicals and think of proteins that will interact with the body in such a way as to make a beneficial result. So that's biotechnology.
So that sounds like pharmacological, whatever the proper...
Right, pharmaceuticals, pharmacological action, yeah. Diagnostics are also part of that, medical devices, eye health even is part of that now.
Eye health, like I, the letter
little
the letter
bitty I with a dot on top
like
of it?
E-Y-E.
little I with a dot on top of it, sure. Both the electronic health and what we call mobile health, you know, where each of us we're getting to a point where each of us can wear various sensors in a non-intrusive way, maybe an armband, and it's picking up important signals from our body all times, beaming it back someplace and sending real-time information and real-time feedback to us being able to adjust so that we can prevent, certain things from coming on. So that's sort of mobile eye health. It's just a wide range of things. In the most classic sense, biotechnology is a term coined probably 30 years ago when we first understood that we could harness, say, the living organism almost to be a manufacturing capacity or manufacturer of molecules that we needed to do something. The classic example is a protein. A protein tends to be very large molecules, very complex, where the structure of the protein itself is what leads to its function. So imagine we're in a studio which is, I don't know, 20 by 20 and 10 feet high right now, and a small molecule therapeutic, say something, the active pharmaceutical ingredient, an aspirin, for example, might be represented in this room by a ping pong ball. A large molecule, a very large protein, you'd string together 30,000 of those ping pong balls, glue them together, and the very shape in which you glued them together to fill this room, the shape would cause would determine their action. They're really complex. It's so hard for us to synthesize those, but it turns out that human cells do that all the time. DNA is the formula that codes for the sequence that goes to the RNA that goes to the ribosome and synthesizes the proteins, and they come out almost perfectly every time. So if we could get the cell to make the protein, that would be a lot better than us trying to do it in a factory. And that's really the classical sense of biotechnology.
What's your background? Because that's all very, I feel like I'm in a chemistry class.
Hey, there you go. Then my ruse has worked. I was in science as undergrad, and then I went into political science and law. So I got law degrees. I practiced as a lawyer. 12 years ago, when I was helping technology companies come out of the university over in Richmond into the biotech park and other technologies, a couple of guys asked me if I wanted to start a small pharmaceutical company with them. So for the last 12 or 13 years before I took this position, I was an entrepreneur. We started a small specialty pharma company, and I got deep into the science again and ran some lab meetings and did some deals, and so rode that roller coaster.
And so that's how we're going to be talking about the topic today, because it comes from the science part of it, which I've listed under research. It talks about the politics, which falls under commercialization a little bit. But it also falls under the ethics, because politics always manages to incorporate commercial and ethics into almost every discussion that we have. So write down your phone number, or write down our phone number. That's 434-979-0919. We'll be taking calls a little bit later during the hour if you have questions or you have comments, because we will be talking with Jeff Gallagher. He's the CEO of the organization Virginia Bio. You can find them online. It's www.vabio.org. That stands for Virginia Biotechnology, vabio.org. So, Jeff, again, so we've defined biotechnology, and it's sort of, we covered the pharma part of it, the medical devices, some of the diagnostics, health. But we didn't talk about, or you didn't list, the agriculture. That seems to be a very negative aspect for many people on the biotechnology part of things. But I'm going to bring that up later in the hour. So for those listening who already jumped up and said, well, what about this? Hold your horses. We'll get to that. Some of the interesting things that I've found about biotechnology is Virginia was provided the first forensic use of DNA in the United States.
That's right. Over in Richmond at the state forensic labs, the ability to sequence DNA and the ability to identify it and to match it was something that was generally known, but its application in law enforcement was something that was really only a dream. And it was over there that they first applied it to the solving of crimes and clues. And the model that they used, that was developed many years ago, then spread to other state labs around the country and ultimately even to the federal system.
I found that to be really kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then even today, I don't know, I don't want to say that Virginia is the only one, but certainly one receiving a lot of notice for using DNA to solve some cold cases, to determine who is actually inmates, prisoners who may not actually be guilty of the crime for which they were charged and convicted.
Right. It's really. You look at the broad swath of those years and the impact of technology, biotechnology in that area, and it's really a magnificent story, isn't it? I mean, with the Innocence Project and some of these other both law school and science-based projects to go back and to make sure that the folks who were convicted of without genetic information, if there's still evidence back there to go, and in some cases, we can with 100% certainty say that is not the person that was involved. To see them then go free, and it's terrific. It's, you know, one theme in science you might know is our ability to, examine, to observe the world is getting more and more sophisticated, so that we can measure quantities, not just say down to the 1,000th of a unit, say a gram, but maybe the millionth now. We get more and more precise in our ability to measure. That allows different things. And this DNA was one of these areas where our ability to get intelligent and accurate information, say in a criminal proceeding now, is so much more powerful and specific than it was, that the results, if we're on information-driven results, they're going to be that much better.
Again, Jeff Gallagher here. He's the CEO of the organization Virginia Bio, V-A-B-I-O. Go to their website, vabio.org. Now, Jeff, the organization is, what's the proper word for it? It seems to me to be an organization that goes forth and brings biotechnological groups together, businesses together, and then shouts the positive aspects of all of this.
That is one good, solid characterization of what we are. So it's what they call a 501c6 organization, an industry organization. It's a nonprofit, and our members, it's a member-based organization. Our members are comprised of companies, bioscience companies, and as you said, they could be therapeutic, diagnostic, medical device, pure research, what they call CROs, contract research organizations. It's also the companies that service them and enable them to succeed. So that could be law firms or accounting firms or design firms, communication firms, financial folks. And also the research institutions around the state that provide much of the fuel for innovation and entrepreneurship that allows this ecosystem to live, if you will. So it's companies and researchers and research institutions. When we have an event, we'll have folks from the universities, we'll have graduate students, we'll have PhDs, we'll have CEOs, we'll have lab bench workers, we'll have doctors, we'll have patient groups who are interested, we'll have financial folks. We bring that mix together, say that's the ecosystem. Everyone's voice, you know, informs us better and tells us about certain needs they have. So we then, Virginia Bio, tries to understand and tell the story of the biosciences in Virginia. What it's done, what its needs are, what its promises and its hopes, what the important decisions and issues are that we've got to face ourselves as an industry and as a larger community, the Commonwealth. And then, so that's one thing we do. We then do, say, networking events to make the community stronger in and of itself. We do educational events, so, you know, people who are in their little silos in their companies or their labs learn from one another. And then we'll do what we call public policy. So we inform and express and answer questions both at the state level to our public policymakers and at the federal level. Well, did you know that ABC you're thinking about doing, that's really going to harm this, or that's really good. That's going to really help getting the technology out of the universities into the hands of people who can get it to the clinic or the marketplace.
Everything comes back to these days in current politics and policy. Everything comes down to that'll create more jobs.
Yeah.
Jobs is the one word that must be in the sentence of any discussion about political goals or, you know, truths or falsities. Jobs must always be a word that's included. So one of the things that Virginia Bio lists on the website is assisting entrepreneurs. But one of the things I found interesting is that of a large number of the groups that are part, you said the Virginia Bio is a business-based, it's only current businesses that can be involved. What was the proper phrasing that you use? You have to be
members. Yeah, members. Uh-huh. We have business members, and then we have nonprofit members. And
but the company average is 6.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be fascinating, that of all the companies involved in Virginia Bio, the average number of employees is 6.
Yeah. I think that actually that figure is for the industry in general in Virginia, but it reflects that there are a lot of startups in this area, that technology is widespread and the opportunity and the dreams to do something is widespread, and that there are a lot of folks who say, I feel passionately about this. I have an advantage or a discovery I've made or an insight. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to get a couple people around me, and we're going to do something about it, by gosh. And in Virginia, we have good soil for taking innovations and doing some entrepreneurship with them.
So how do you help them?
Yeah, it's a great question. There are a lot of resources around the state that help entrepreneurs in general. So there are incubators here in Charlottesville and in Richmond and all around that do that. There are programs, state programs that help entrepreneurs in the technology area. CIT, the Center for Innovative Technology up in Northern Virginia, is the independent nonprofit organization set up by the state 30 years ago, which is really the place where a lot of those programs come to bear. So CIT has programs which will give grants to young companies, either young individuals or young companies who have promising technology, to do a proof of concept run, if you will. They will do training. They'll do mentorships. They will invest in small companies. So one of our roles as a Virginia Bio is not to reinvent the wheel, but to tell aspiring entrepreneurs in the bioscience where they can go around the state and get resources.
And again, when we talk about biotechnology, just to remind folks, because again, when I brought this up, I got so many quizzical looks, is it involves pharmacological, medical devices, diagnostics, health, fuel, industries, agricultures. It's mm-hmm. a wide range when you start talking about the number of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial businesses to come up. That covers a great deal of the pie.
Mm-hmm. Covers a lot. And well, remember, healthcare in our economy is what, 15% of our GDP?
And growing.
And growing, yeah. Biotechnology obviously has a great play in healthcare. It has been and will continue to be. One of the things we talk about in biotechnology and healthcare is not only additional cures, but finding new ways to do treatment and diagnostic and prevention, which will, you know, quote unquote, bend the cost curve down. So the application of innovation and technology to those problems, our folks are going to be some of the people who we hope will be a long-term solution to keeping costs down while access is expanded.
Our guest today, Jeff Gallagher, he's the CEO of the organization Virginia Bio, and we talk about biotechnology in the state of Virginia.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the festival July 12th through 14th at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCrory Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
WNRN is brought to you by the Vinegar Hill Theater, Charlottesville's home for critically acclaimed cinema, now featuring digital projection. The Vinegar Hill Theater is at 220 West Market Street off the downtown mall. Now playing at Vinegar Hill, it's The Bling Ring. More information, including what's playing at Stanton's Visual Light and Dixie Theaters, is at visuallightcinemas.com. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for being with us today. Just a quick reminder, WNRN and the Wake-Up Call are looking for a second producer for the show. If you have interest in the program, you're available to help out two Sundays a month and have basic computer skills, let us know. We can teach you the rest. Stop by WNRN or send me an email, rmoore@wnrn.org. Back with our guest, Jeff Gallagher, the CEO of Virginia Bio, as we talk about biotechnology. Jeff, you were talking about medical I don't know, solutions, medical innovations. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is often talked about with when you start talking about medicine is affordability.
Mm-hmm.
How does Virginia Bio have any play, or is there any sort of discussion amongst the groups about making discoveries sort of affordable rather than as profitable as possible?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a balance that we always think about. Most of the companies that are in Virginia in this space are ones that are more at the invention, development, and discovery end, if you will. The 20 or 30 or 40 companies that are here in Charlottesville tend to be smaller companies. They tend to develop their therapeutics and then license them out to larger companies who will lend the development and sink in the hundreds of millions of dollars and finally sell them. And so they're really not in charge of the ultimate price to the consumer. So that having been said, Rick, you point out, I mean, it is an interesting balance, because you might have the best therapy in the world, but if it's inaccessible, what can you do? We do have as a portion of our membership some of the large pharmaceutical companies. They are not located in Virginia, but they're members of our organization and an organization statewide in order to make their views on issues like this and others known so that we can formulate a state position expressed to our state legislators or to the federal legislators. So these issues come up a lot. You learn that some of the things we might have been concerned about 20 years ago with sort of free-range pricing, a lot of those issues are disappearing now because, you know, with our Affordable Care Act, the whole structure of reimbursement, the whole mechanism by which it's determined is not going to be changed. This sense of the law is changing, so even the companies that set the final price aren't going to be able to set it in that free way that they used to. There are going to be many more voices involved in that price decision. I was talking to one of the companies who's one of our members who is a medical device company out in the valley, and they were looking at the next 5 years and saying, boy, the way that devices are going to be priced from here on is going to be a lot different. It used to be that you came up with a great device, you found some doctors who were going to be using it, say a surgical device. You took them out golfing a couple of times, did a couple of conferences, they fell in love with your device, they insisted that it was great, they had to use it, the hospital had to buy it, the hospital bought it, and they asked you what the price was and you told them. You said, it's not going to be like that anymore. Now, you know, we're going to look for comparative effectiveness and all these sorts of things. It may be a better device than the one they're using, but how much better? Does it actually improve outcomes? If so, how quickly and to what extent does it save hospital time, hospital save? So all that sort of analysis. And he looked at him, he said, you know, actually that's better. I would rather compete on that basis because that's what we're after in the first place, better products that help the patients better. So it's a big mindset change that's going on. But I think you'll find that the people who are creating these things, once we line up the values, they'll be for those as well.
Oh, let's talk about commercialization for just a minute. Again, our guest today, Jeff Gallagher, he's the CEO of Virginia Bio. It's a biotechnology. What's the word that I want?
Industry organization, membership organization.
Yeah, but the group that says yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Promoters.
Promoters, yes.
Promoters.
Promotes biotechnology.
The voice of bioscience.
Promotes biotechnology in the state of Virginia. Jeff Gallagher, the CEO. We'll open up the phone lines if you have a question or a comment. 979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. So, Jeff, biotechnology, it's one thing to talk about the commercialization, the money, the profitability of the... whether you're the inventor or whether you're the business that is actually selling it to the general public. But one of the things that Virginia Bio does is brings money to the state of Virginia. That's a commercial part of it, is getting the businesses to come here, providing tax issues to make it better for the businesses to come here, making sure that the businesses that come here have the employees that they need to do so. So let's talk about that. How does Virginia Bio go about bringing these businesses here, increasing the money that's in that's flowing into the state?
Okay. Let me, so I'm going to divide that into two things. I'm going to divide that into building up our community here so that it's really attractive to outsiders to want to come. And then the other is actually, say, recruiting others to come. Virginia Bio works closely with existing organizations in the state that do that. So the Virginia Economic Development Partnership is one. That's the state-level economic development organization, headquartered in Richmond. And they go around the world to trade fairs and to international bio and device fairs. And they sell Virginia to the world. And when they have... when they need support in the bioscience, either to hook up with companies here who have had a good experience and will talk to a company from outside and say, you ought to come here and here's why, we'll hook them up or we'll travel with them sometimes, we'll give them technical information, we'll support them in that way. So that's that on the inbound side, that's one thing. On the part now of making sure that our environment here in, say, in public policy is at the tops so that our companies here will thrive and our inventors at universities and will get their tech transfer out and doing good things. Again, we work with the state, our state legislature, our General Assembly, and our executives to identify the programs that will help and that will hurt. And then we go around the state to individual companies and to universities, to places that do research, to inform them of those programs so they can use them. So, for example, over the last 7 or 8 years, Virginia Bio has led the way in creating what we call a bioscience caucus in the General Assembly. There are now 60 members of both chambers, both the House and the Senate, who have said, we really think bioscience is important to Virginia now for jobs, like you said, and for the health of our folks, for the vitality of our higher higher learning and research universities. So we want to find, we want to listen to what helps it and hurts it, and we want to try to make our policies mimic that. So we work that. We work with what's called the Bioscience Caucus, and every year we report on what things seem to have worked and what things might be better. So some of the things that we've worked on over the last 6 or 8 years and helped put into law are incentives for research and development, something called the Research and Development Tax Credit. There are small business innovation grants that CIT administers. You know, NIH or NSF will, I don't know if you know this, Rick, but in at the federal system, when the federal government does research, 5% or so of all research dollars have to be directed to small businesses who effectuate and live out the research plan the federal government was going to do. Those are called SBIR or STTR grants. And so small companies throughout Virginia and many, many in Charlottesville will look at the research scheme that, say, NIH Cancer Institute has, its plan for the next 5 years, and say, hey, a lot of that lines up with what we're doing. We can do that part of the research for you. You know, we're doing it in our labs now. So you apply, you get a grant. Either the phase one grant is called SBIR1, and that's $150,000, and if you're successful at that, you're eligible for a phase two grant. That can be $1 million for that comes to your company, no strings attached, to execute that research research program. And so we will argue and lobby at the federal level to keep and maintain and strengthen those programs, and at the state level, we'll argue for public policy that sort of leverages those. So CIT has a program that says anyone in the state in the biosciences who has gotten an SBIR grant, we will help with some state money to match that at a smaller level. And that allows young companies that are starting out with young technologies to get some non-dilutive funding, so they don't have to go to a venture capitalist, they don't have to go to a bank and put up a mortgage on their house, to try out and move that young technology along. So that's an example of a kind of a program that we fight for.
All right, and so now how do you get the people here? Because even if the state were to, or maybe the state does have the wherewithal and the commodities to teach everything from within, so mm-hmm. that all the employees can come from within the state of Virginia.
Right. That's an excellent point. And as I go around the state and talk to the companies that are growing up everywhere, and by the way, it's a tremendously exciting time in the state for the biosciences. So much activity. And in Charlottesville in particular, many eyes around the country are looking to Charlottesville because of its very high level of bioscience entrepreneurship and the success it's having. That having been said, to go around the state, one of the pinch points is, you know, it takes a good while to get the right people here.
You can have all the ideas you want, but if you don't have anybody to help you put it together.
That's right. That's right. It takes a lot of good people and a lot of skilled people who have actually been around the track a couple times too. You know, you fail quickly is one of the things they say. So what are the things that are going to make this not work? If I get the right people in the room, I can take my 10 ideas and I can de-risk them down to the two that have the highest chance of success. So compared to a Boston, for instance, or a San Francisco, we don't have that depth of talent. But we're working on it. That having been said, there's a lot, and it's a growing group. I know that, so for instance, in Charlottesville, the community, one of the great leaders of the community is the UVA community and UVA Innovation. UVA Innovation is a part of the university that's been created out of, it's a new creation of which several parts were there before. Tech transfer and licensing and those sorts of things. And the idea was, under the new leadership of the last 8 or 10 years, all the way from the top to the bottom, it's to try to reimagine the university so that it's conceived that the benefits of the discoveries and innovations, if those are expressed in real things in the clinic and in the marketplace, that expression of learning and research is every bit as valuable as expression in a journal or in a book. And then if that's true, then how does the university align itself to make that happen? And UVA Innovation is doing that. So to your question, a very important part of what they're doing is trying to find people in the Virginia community who could act as mentors, if you will, or even take a job in some of these spin-offs that are coming out of UVA. They go around the country talking about their programs and trying to inbound recruit people to become part of the ecosystem. The state, you know, the state's role in that is what? It's to fund and provide the resources at the higher education level.
Right. We must better our science and technology education in our school system.
Right. STEMH. Science, technology, education, or engineering, math, and health we put on at the end of that as well. So the state can do that at the graduate level and at the professional level, and it also needs to do it at the level of the young child too.
But you almost must provide, again, our guest today, Jeff Gallagher, he's the CEO of Virginia Bio. We're talking about biotechnology overall, and especially at the moment within the state of Virginia. But you must also sort of recruit those outside the state of Virginia, immigrants into the state of Virginia,
right.
You know, those from other states, and those are certainly part of the immigrant discussion in the other way that people probably heard that, you know, green card folks to come into our state with the technologies and skills.
That's,
are they provided special, you know, businesses are always given tax credits and other things to draw them in. Are individuals with these necessary skills provided special treats
mm-hmm.
to come work here?
Mm-hmm. You mean like opportunities to appear on this program, things like that?
I don't know. Some people would consider that to be send me to hell for an hour and I won't come back.
Well, you know, I know I'm dangerous in the tiny bit I know about immigration law, but I do know that a number of our companies who are in the specialized tech area, if they have a need for someone and it can't be met here, you know, that's the grounds for a certain kind of immigration openings for folks overseas. You know, you talk about overseas technology coming in. There's an exciting company, exciting group of companies in Richmond, which is that are using Israeli-based technology kind of as a pipeline for new ideas to come and form companies. And there are a number of very significant companies that have come from that opening. I think in the sciences in particular, the flow of information is global. You know, we can think about Virginia competing against Maryland or North Carolina in the bioscience area, and some people do. We tend to think of them as our collaborators in a region which has to compete against global centers in China and in India and in Europe. So the flow of science and the flow of ideas is global, and we think have to think of ourselves as global. So all those things, Rick, but to your point, though, it is, you know, getting the right people is important. And I'd say in the last 5 or 8 years, we have noticed that Virginia has become a destination place. So it's not a Boston or San Francisco and may never become, but people are now coming to Virginia for opportunities in the biosciences. And that's great, make a big difference.
Actually, one of the pieces of paperwork that was provided to me by Virginia Bio for my homework is that Virginia is listed as number one in tech workers in the USA. Not sure where that comes from. Yeah. 11:36 here on the wake-up call. Just to head out for our next break, Jeff, one of the things that came off your website which caught my eye is that founded the Virginia, state of Virginia, founded in 1607 by a venture-based company in London. I love that. Often reminding people that that many wonderful things come from the business world.
Support for WNRN comes from Pocahontas Live, presenting OAR with Andrew McMahon and Alan Stone, Wednesday, July 31st. Gates at 5, show at 5:30. Tickets for Dark Star Orchestra on August 3rd are on sale. There's music all summer at Pocahontas State Park in Chesterfield. Tickets at PocahontasLive.com.
Michelle Knuckles, mortgage banker with Westar Mortgage, joins our members in support of independent music radio WNRN. Westar can help with a purchase or refinance from first-time buyers to jumbo loans. You can reach Michelle at michelleknuckles.com. Two L's in Michelle, N-U-C-K-O-L-S.com. Westar Mortgage is an equal opportunity housing company. NMLS number 198053.
The Center for Human-Animal Interaction in Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine was established in 2001. Hi, I'm Dr. Sandra Barker, and this is the first center of its kind to be established in a school of medicine in the nation. CHI's most visible program is our Dogs on Call, our animal-assisted therapy and pet visitation program in the VCU Medical Center. CHI brings therapy dogs and their wonderful volunteer owners from the community to visit patients and staff throughout the medical center, and we research the benefits of human animal interaction. The Center for Human-Animal Interaction offers educational opportunities for medical and other students, and the center activities are made possible primarily through donations and with assistance from many talented volunteers. Visit our center website at chai.vcu.edu for more information.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today here on WNRN. Jeff Gallagher's here, the CEO of Virginia Bio, talking about biotechnology in the state and a little bit in the world. Let me take a moment. Next week, we'll have UVA Professor of Religious Studies John Portman here talking about religion, sin, moral psychology, and his book, The Ethics of Sex and Alzheimer's. Let's just say that caught my attention when I stumbled across that. Again, you can call in 434-979-0919. I don't say this often enough, but you can send us an instant message, WNRN Studio. And here's one, very simple. It says, when are you going to get to the things like the GMOs and the, I closed that a minute ago, but I got the point because I have some notes on that. So let's take a minute, because biotechnology also cuts into many things that not everyone is for. You mentioned that you had 60 members of the Bioscience Caucus here in the state of Virginia, but I believe there are 140 members of the legislature. So that means that there are 80 who are not members of the caucus. Is that because 60 is the max, or because there are 80 who at this point have decided not to participate?
Yeah, it's not the max by any means. These are, you know, the caucuses are sort of voluntary groups or clubs, if you will, of areas where legislators are specially interested. And so it not being in a caucus doesn't mean you're opposed to it. It just means, you know, we all have priorities. And these members say, well, this is my priority and these aren't. It could be because they're universities or research centers or companies in their district that they want to make sure they watch, or that they're really behind economic development. So I wouldn't read into that number that the ones are opposed. They might be. I'm not trying to.
But we know that there are a couple topics out there which have received a lot of current events discussion from both sides, whether you're pro or con. So let's jump into one that is somewhat recent, the gene patent rule. The U.S. Supreme Court says that, and often this is misinterpreted, so that's why I want to bring this up early, is that the Supreme Court said, hey, you can't patent a human's genetic, you know, DNA, okay? And everyone says, of course, you can't patent that. It's my DNA. That's what God gave us all as our, you know, genetic structure. But when you read about it on Virginia Bio, again, vabio.org, and there are some, find it, and the links will take you where you need to go, is that businesses who are involved in this say there's more to it than that, and you're not fully understanding the issue.
Well, the case was just decided, what, last week or the week before. Myriad Genetics was the company, and the court, there were two major branches of the court's decision, because there were two different kinds of DNA that were claimed in the patents that were at issue. The first one was, first of all, I probably should be talking about this as genes rather than DNA. We all know that DNA sequences make genes, but you can have a room full of DNA and there might not be a gene in there. So the gene is a particular alignment of the DNA that codes for a protein that then becomes expressed. And the patents that Myriad Genetics had covered two types of things. One was the naturally occurring DNA sequence that coded for a gene. And they said when we isolated that from the long strand on which it occurred, that was the first time that it had been isolated like that, just as a gene, and that that itself should be patentable. So not necessarily the one inside the cell in my arm or your arm, but an isolated one from a strand. The other kind of claim in the patent that they were issued was for something called cDNA, sometimes called complementary DNA or created DNA or composite DNA. And it's very different, and it's an important distinction. In that sequence of DNA that makes a gene, there can often be a lot of DNA that isn't actually part of the message. It's just filler, even inside that gene, so that one could get the very same message delivered throughout the cell if you took out that filler. So you might shrink that strand of DNA, which we call the naturally occurring gene, by 20 or 30% by getting out all the junk and still have all the information. And in therapeutic applications of DNA that exist now, that's really what they do. They say, okay, here's a naturally occurring gene. If I want to cure a disease, which is a disease because it lacks a certain protein, I can inject into the cells where they need that protein the DNA that codes for the protein, and then it'll make more protein and the disease will be cured. But instead of, why bother sending in that 30% of extra junk that's along with that DNA? Let me just make a copy of that gene without all the junk. So that is a new creation, if you will, or that's what they argued. It's a new creation. That sort of streamlined, you know, fit and trim gene doesn't occur in nature. We made that with our brain power. So cDNA is another thing that we claim in our patent. And the Supreme Court looked at that and they said, okay, the first kind where you just isolate it, that's naturally occurring, it's just what it was, that's not patentable. That's just part of nature. You can't do that. That's like saying wood is patentable. But this other one where you slice and dice it and you make a more efficient, elegant thing and then you use that for therapeutics, that is patentable. We'll allow those claims to stand. That's the decision that was taken. Now, so some of the things about that. There are some of those original, so the therapeutic applications of gene engineering are probably all going to be protected by that cDNA part of the ruling. And so the part of our industry that does therapeutic DNA breathed a sigh of relief because the court said that's patentable subject matter. You know, it's still on a case-by-case basis whether you deserve a patent, but that's conceivably patentable. And the investors who put money in, you know, that fund these $100 million projects. The other part, the first part of just the isolated gene, those patents did protect some products that were out there, and so immediately those are going to be available to people. Many of them were very old, 16, 17 years old in the human case. Those will now be immediately available. There are other areas where gene discovery is not as advanced as it is in humans. For instance, you know, the microbiome. I don't know, Rick, if you're familiar with that word, but there's a growing appreciation in the last few years that our organism, the human body, lives not just in a huge biome or environment, but there's a microbiome that is very important to us, and we interact with symbiotically, and it's all the little microorganisms that are on our skin and in our stomach and throughout.
Right. We are the solar system. Each person is a solar system for smaller parts of our body.
Right. And we are just beginning to discover all the helpful things that they do. Each one of those has its own genetic material. So if something has gone awry in our relationship, one might look at that and say, well, we might have to treat the microbiome so that it can resume the healthy interaction it had with us. Well, the genetic sequences of those are yet to be done. So how this ruling will impact some of that early research is something that needs to be done. But I think coming to your point, though, from our point of view, representing companies and researchers who are not just trying to discover this, but actually get it into reality somehow, patent law is important because it's one of the places society balances the rewards to the inventors versus getting this out there to the people who need it. You know, the balance now is 20 years of protection. If you have an invention, you want a patent, you have to describe it to the world in such detail that anybody in the world could do it. That's what a patent disclosure is. So now the world has the information, but they have to wait for 20 years to make money off it. And then it's forever there. So that's a delicate balance. And, you know, we just try to do our best, and area by area it's different. And the Supreme Court has weighed in, and I think a lot of people think this is a good balancing in this part.
We're talking about biotechnology, a little focus on the state of Virginia. Jeff Gallagher is our guest today. He's the CEO of Virginia Bio. You can find them online at vabio.org, that is org, and Bio, Virginia Bio, pretty much promotes biotechnology in the positive ways that it can be used. But Jeff, so we talk about the gene patent rule, but then let's take another step. We talk about biotechnology is also used in agriculture, and so now we're into Monsanto and the non-GMO project and all parts of that. With the current discussion that's going on, which seems to be very heartily non-Monsanto, it doesn't take long to go to your Facebook page and find someone who you are friends with who's putting up another bad Monsanto issue article that's come out, or picture where you're making fun of Monsanto or saying how evil they are. You don't have to look very deep into your newspaper or your iPhone to find out where Monsanto is now being treated as a very evil, somewhere on the seven steps of hell, as an organization goes. does Virginia Bio or biotechnology, how is this and how are the deeds that Monsanto performs and other agricultural biotechnology organizations presented as good for our world?
First of all, to put it in context, so Monsanto is not a member of ours. We in Virginia, we don't have, we have some agricultural bioactivity. It's not as strong as in the therapeutic and the human area, but we have some, and it's important in some. Agricultural, you know, this comes back to your very first question, what is biotechnology? It's very interesting because agricultural biotechnology actually has been going on, you know, since civilization began. We've been crossing strains of organisms and getting organisms that never existed before by this crossing of strains. And the technology of the last 30 or 40 years has allowed to do us, allowed us to do it in a much more powerful, immediate, focused, purposeful, effective way than ever before. You know, by inserting genes, like, as you know, a gene which makes a crop resistant to a certain disease, you know. So there are, if you could do that and the story stopped there, I think most folks would say that's terrific. That really increases the food supply in a time when the world needs the food. The question is, are there unintended consequences with it as well? And are those, do those either follow through on a food stock to the animal or to ourselves if we're talking about an agriculture product? Or can there be, can we put into effect a cascade of events which we can't foresee, which make for other genetic modifications of the organism, and can the thing spread? So those are all issues that people are concerned about. I think our position as an organization is that the worries can be addressed and that the technology needs to be harnessed for all the good it can do. So that's where we come down. We don't get involved that much on the issues. That's mostly a federal level issue. We personally don't get involved that much, but I was just out in the Northern Neck actually yesterday. My wife's cousin farms out, you know, by Village in Warsaw. We were over there for the day, and he was talking about how life now, farming is so different than it was 40 years ago. Instead of scattering, you know, a million seeds, knowing that some will work and some won't, you know, their seeds cost 4 cents a piece now, but they know every one of those suckers is going to grow up if they plant it right. And so there are aspects that are beneficial.
11:52 on the Wake Up Call. Our guest, Jeff Gallagher from Virginia Bio Organization here in the state of Virginia.
Support for WNRN today comes from the Rockingham County Fair, presenting Old Crow Medicine Show on Thursday, August 15th. You can find Rockingham County Fair on your GPS, Route 11 Harrisonburg. Tickets for Old Crow Medicine Show and Chuck Mead and his Grassy Knoll Boys on Thursday, August 15th are at rockinghamcountyfair.com.
Support for WNRN comes from the Blue Ridge Summer Theater Festival, presented by N Station Theater Company through July 30th. Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew runs through July 7th at Sweetbriar College. Violet, a musical, and Shakespeare's Cymbeline run through July 14th at Sweetbriar. Outdoor performances include wine and beer from local vineyards and breweries. NStationTheater.org.
And let me remind you that whether you're an iPhone or an Android user, it's easy to get WNRN on your phone. For Android users, we recommend the TuneIn app, available at Google Play. Willow Tree Apps has created the WNRN iPhone app, which you can find at the App Store or at WNRN.org. Just click on Listen to download the app. That's Willow Tree Apps, created the WNRN iPhone app. Just a few minutes left with our guest, Jeff Gallagher. We were talking about some of the bad issues, or negative. I shouldn't say bad. That puts thoughts into other people's processes. But some of the things that have certainly received a lot of negative conversation, Monsanto and genetically modified organisms, the gene patent rule. One of the things that I found interesting, I was unaware of, which is the world's first cloned pig back in the year 2000, created from a Blacksburg-based company.
Right, right. It's the same group of people that were involved in the cloning of Dolly the sheep over in Scotland. And then PPD came over to Blacksburg and that group of folks. And, yeah, that happened. It was exciting. They made the cover of some of the great science magazines of the time and even some of the great popular magazines, those cute little pigs. Interesting thing where that has led, you know. It hasn't led to a factory that turns out pigs. What it's led to over there, though, has been some really groundbreaking research that will have a direct impact on diabetes. They are, what they've been able to do is grow tissue. Because of those insights and some of that work, they're now able to grow tissue of the pancreas of the human pig, which is the organ, which is the animal system which most closely resembles the human, and so is frequently used as a source of islet cells for human transplantation. For folks who are suffering from really severe diabetes. And so now there's a new source of cells for transplant. There's a thought that they may be able to have independent sort of pancreatic systems created out of those tissues, and possibly in the future even grow replacement pancreases out of the pig system that can be transplanted in humans to really help the diabetic patient. So great discovery, but a good example of where it doesn't go in a straight line, but clever and inventive people can find ways nonetheless to come back to important applications.
All right, because, and I think I copied this directly off the website, and the phrase was created from the Blacksburg-based company.
Mm-hmm.
So when you use words like created, isn't that what drives forward people who are protesting sort of this kind of work for animals and plants? Because when it's straight out of, you know, when it helps humans, not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about altering the structure of animals and plants, not so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that something, because I see this elsewhere where I quoted Virginia Bio, and one of the missions is enhance public awareness and dispel public misconceptions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is this part of it? Do those tie together when you're trying to tell people, wait a minute, we're not playing God. This is what we're trying to do. But do using words like create cause that problem for you?
These are great questions. You know, the area
I've given you about 3 minutes.
Okay. the area of bioscience and biotechnology is one where it's just at the forefront of what human ingenuity has been able to produce. We have at our fingertips and in our laboratories at the universities and a power to impact life in the world around us, which is greater than any generation before us. And as I said earlier, you know, that it should cause it really needs to cause an examination of soul searching and an examination of what it means to be human. You know, we need to go into this with a great amount of humility as well as a great amount of pride and hopefulness. That has to be balanced in every case. You know, what I see is great, wonderful, well-meaning people doing the work, confronting questions that no one has ever confronted before, and the industry gradually building both in the industry and then in public policy.
All right, so let's go out on some interesting notes. Current research, and you can pick whatever, you know, I'm going to toss out a category or two, and you can pick whatever comes to mind in terms of what's happening.
Right.
What are some of the new biological, biotechnology discoveries in industrials or fuels or medical devices?
Yeah, industrial or fuels, it's, you know, understanding the enzymes better that will break down, say, algae and make fuels out of that, so that we won't have to put our corn crop in you know, as the material that makes our biofuels, but can use pools of algae, tremendously more efficient, and frees up that food stock. On the medical side, I mean, right here in Charlottesville, you have terrific new medicines being developed for cancer, both to fight it itself, but also to be co-administered with existing cancer therapies to multiply the way that we can attack cancer cells tremendously. New diagnostics for third world infectious disease that allows you to immediately and with great certainty diagnose that so that treatment can be arrived at immediately. Over in Richmond, there's a company called HDL, which is taking all the known biomarkers we can get out of blood and using those to do smart lab tests so that they aspire to make health something we do proactively, not retroactively.
All right. Jeff, thank you so much for coming in today. Jeff Gallagher, he's the CEO of Virginia Bio. You can find that online, www.vabio.org. Will you come back in the future? Because this conversation needs to continue on some other steps.
Delighted to. And let's get some questions, too, from your folks.
All right. Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay, Rick.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.